Hello, Dale speaking. This is India.
Dale speaking. This is Rue.
Dale speaking. This is Amber.
Ring, ring. Dale speaking.
Sesame Street was inspired by the Monkees because they had a variety show. So, eat that.
The Muppets was a variety show. Not Sesame Street.
Well, whatever. It's puppets doing shit. It's like, look, we're learning, and the Monkees did that.
Welcome to Radio Dale number 44. This week in music history, which president waged a war on drugs in music?
This week on the charts, breaking down the top 10 albums in Canada.
This week's campus report, America versus Canada.
This week in music tech, the birth of the YouTube Music Awards and the demise of Twitter Music. Thunder!
This week we have new music from Coney Hatch.
And in part two, Rue is talking with publicist extraordinaire Christina Fernandez from Listen Harder Publicity.
It's time for This Week in Music History. Now I'm going to kick it off with October 24th, 2009. Michael Bublé went to number one on the US album chart with Crazy Love.
That was 2009?
2009.
Wow. Number one in the US. Canadian number one in the US. That makes me proud.
It's fourth studio album. So there you go. Bublé fans. What do they call Bublé fans?
Bublies?
Bublies?
That doesn't sound right.
Bublies.
Bublies.
I like Bublies. October 25th, 1970, speaking at a U.S. radio conference, President Nixon asked programmers to ban all songs containing drug references. I find this point funny because the next time I talk, I will reference this point. Interesting because that's every song. In the 70s, probably could have referred drugs in one way or another.
Yep.
Whether it actually did or not, you could probably find a way it did.
Very true.
October 26, 2004. Oh, this is a good one. Apple launched the U2 Special Edition iPod as part of a partnership between Apple, U2, and Universal Music Group. The new U2 iPod held up to 5,000 songs and featured a red click wheel and custom engraving of U2 band member signatures. The iPod was being introduced as the band released their new album, How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb.
And that's something that didn't really catch on, I don't think, in the sense of, like, other bands. Like,
I don't remember this ever happening.
I remember it.
Really?
Yeah. It was a big deal, and this is, like, when iPods were, like, new. Like,
that was, like,
new.
Just starting.
Yeah, and I, like, it was great for, like, hardcore U2 fans, because you got the entire catalog.
Okay.
On your iPod. So instead of going and through all your CDs and vinyls and doing whatever you have to do to get it all on your iPod, you just paid whatever price. And I think it was pricey. And then you had it there plus the new album plus other stuff.
Yeah. October 27th, 1980. Mark Chapman, what's this leading to, bought a 5-shot 38 special for $169. A little over 6 weeks later, he would use the gun to kill John Lennon outside his New York City apartment.
America, shake my hand.
That's weird. They called him Mark Chapman. There's always three names. It's Mark David Chapman, isn't it?
I don't know.
Assassins always have three names. John Wilkes Booth, Mark David Chapman.
John Cougar Mellencamp.
John Cougar Mellencamp. He assassinated my heart.
He assassinated me with good music. October 28th, 2001. And again, remember my last point I made about 1970... President Nixon asking programmers to ban songs containing drug references. Fast forward, October 28, 2001, Afro Man started a 2-week run at number one with the UK singles chart with Because I Got High.
Because I Got High.
The song about how cannabis use was degrading his quality of life rose from obscurity to popularity after it was circulated around the internet in 2001. Yep. So... yeah, Nixon, you failed.
I still hear people, that song gets referenced
because I got
so
high.
Often.
October 29th, 2003, research in the US found that songs get stuck in our heads because they create, in quotes, a brain itch that can only be scratched by repeating a tune over and over. Songs such as the Village People's YMCA and the Baha Men's Who Let the Dogs Out owe their success to their ability to create a cognitive itch. This is according to Professor James Kalaris of the University of Cincinnati College of Business Administration.
So next time we get a song submission and we don't feel that it has a very strong chorus, we can say, it didn't make my brain itchy.
Didn't make my brain itchy. But the other term for it is an earworm.
I like itchy brain.
I like earworm. It's the worm crawls into your ear and just kind of...
See, that's gross. Brain itchy is funny.
Brain itchy, you have to stick your finger into your ear and scratch your brain to get at it, though.
Or up your nose.
Which both of these are very relevant to a comment I'm going to make in a second. But before that counting. October 30th, 1969. Born on this day, Canadian rapper Snow.
And?
What? I don't understand.
There's another.
Informer. Oh my god, there's more. Also born on this day, 2 years before 1967. Amber's alternate lover, Gavin Rossdale from Bush. 1997 UK number 7 single, Swallowed. I think that's the highest they ever charted, right?
Well, in Canada, no.
Oh, really?
Canada, in 2011, their highest charting single, The Sound of Winter, number one.
Who got them to number one, Amber?
All of us.
Yeah, that's
here,
right.
Here
at Dale's. So here we go.
So after all of that rambling... Happy birthday, Snow.
Happy birthday,
and Gavin Rossdale.
And you guys should get together and make a song. Because your birthday buddies.
A birthday song.
Yeah. October 30th, brain itching earworms. That must mean that our next episode comes out on Halloween Day.
What? Not All Hallows Eve. Halloween's Day.
All Halloween's Days.
And we're going to be dressed up.
Yes, we'll take pictures. And we'll have a Halloween special. So that's our teaser here in This Week in Music History.
Oh, thunderclap. Oh.
Thunderclap now!
Halloween special.
I'm gonna not put in the thunderclap. We just sound really stupid. And that has been This Week in Music History. Have a musically historical week.
No.
Okay.
Welcome to This Week on the Charts. And for fun, we are going to take a look at the top 10 albums in Canada this week. I took a look at some interesting stats, so we're just going to look at more than who is charting, but let's just jump right in so you have an idea of the top albums. You've got Pearl Jam's new one at number one. You've got Lord at number two with Pure Heroine. Number three, you've got Paul McCartney with New. Number four, Miley Cyrus with Bangers. Number five, you've got Drake with Nothing Was the Same. Number six, you've got Cher, Closer to the Truth. Number seven, Jack Johnson, From Here to Now. Number eight, Melissa Bedard, self-titled. Number nine, you've got Shad with Flying Colors. And lastly, number 10, Justin Timberlake, 2020 Experience. The complete, I'm sure there's supposed to be more words there. The complete collection or something or other. So looking at all of those albums, they are ranging in formats. Quite a few pop artists there. We have four of those singles debuted on the chart this week. Pearl Jam debuted at number one. Paul McCartney debuted in the number three spot. Melissa Bedard debuted at number eight. And Shad debuted at number nine. So the rest have been on the chart ranging from two to 5 weeks. In total, accumulating all of the sales from each of those artists, we have 73,068 albums sold. The most that was sold were 23,000 albums. That was the number one, obviously. And number 10 sold 3,042. So that gives you an idea of the range. Anywhere from 20,000 to less than 4,000. So that's kind of just giving you an idea of what's happening with the top 10 albums in Canada.
Hi everyone! So this week for your campus report, I thought it would be fun to compare some of the Canadian Earshot charts with the American charts, which come through the College Music Journal. So actually, some campus stations in Canada report to CMJ, which is what it's called in the United States, but of course they have a lot more colleges and universities that report to their charts as well, and one of the big differences is they just post their top 20 albums that they've reported. So I've come up with a list of a few of the common albums and artists that are on both charts. So this week we have, for number one on the CMJ charts, is the Arctic Monkeys with their album Arctic Monkeys. And then some other bands that are on both charts are Nico Case, The Worst Things Get, Churches, The Bones of What You Believe, Deer Tick, Negativity, and finally Said the Whale is on both charts. So that's really exciting, actually, that there's a Canadian act that's on the American College Top 20 for their charts. And if you compare that to the Canadian, the Earshot charts, we have 13 out of the top 20 are Canadian. So there's definitely a big difference with the role that CanCon plays even in campus music. But still really great for Said the Whale to have their album Hawaii on the CMJ charts. So if you want to check it out, again, it's College Music Journal and earshotonline.ca for the Canadian ones. Take care.
This week I have a short tech report for you. I'm going to be talking about the YouTube Music Awards and Twitter Music. Now first, the YouTube Music Award nominees have been announced. They're in categories like video, artist, innovator, breakthrough, and they also give room for people who do covers in a special response category. If you search YTMA on YouTube, you'll get information on how to vote. Now a warning, it does involve sharing on Twitter or Facebook or Google+. But check out the video that tells you how to vote. It's pretty clever and pretty funny and stars one of the members of Thrill Kill Cult. And as mentioned in the opening, we have the birth of the YouTube Music Awards, but we seem to have the death of Twitter Music. We talked about Twitter Music a while back, about 6 months after it launched. So about 6 months ago, we talked about it on this show, Radio Dale, one of the first episodes. They had an initial boost, but by 2 weeks, they were out of the top 150 apps, and they were well out of the top 150 later. They're actually out of the top 1,500 apps. I personally believe it would probably work better as a tab on the actual Twitter app, so maybe we'll see something like that working out, because it was a great app for discovery. But don't go looking for Twitter Music as an app. It looks like it's going to be shut down pretty soon. And that has been your Music Tech Report.
Hey, so this week we have a new track from a band called Coney Hatch. They are a Canadian band, and their last album actually came out in 1985. So it's their first new album in 28 years. The album is called Four, and their new single that we're going to play for you now is called Blown Away, and it will be coming to Canadian radio the week of November 4th. Enjoy!
Hey man, won't you buy me a drink? It was obvious.
This week I had an opportunity to sit down with Christina Fernandez, who is owner and publicist at Listen Harder here in Toronto. She works with many great bands such as Alexis on Fire, City in Color, and The Lumineers, and she also works with some of our artists, for instance, Jimmy Rankin. And we got to talk a bit about publicity, what publicity is, what people may think publicists do, and when you'd be ready as an artist to go to a publicist. So here's the conversation I had with Christina Fernandez. When we talk to artists about what a publicist does,
yes,
or what when you need public relations, mm-hmm. we usually say it's something you need when it's the right time, and that's definitely something Dale talks about. Mm-hmm. It's not the right time for you. Look for a publicist when it's the right time. In your estimation, when's the right time to have a publicist?
Well, I think it should be pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. I think if you have some buzz, you've played a few shows locally, regionally, and you're drawing quite a few people to your show locally, mm-hmm. You have people reaching out to you from the media saying, hey, I really like your band. I'd like to do a piece in my campus paper. That's a good sign. Mm-hmm. I think that it's important to have something to promote.
Yeah.
Some bands will call us and say, hey, we need publicity. And they don't completely understand what we do and, mm-hmm. and the kind of info and tools we need to do our jobs. I think some bands have a misconception, or artists, that when I say bands, I mean artists in general, musicians. They have a conception, I'm going to hire a publicist and I'm going to be on the cover of the weekly in my mm-hmm. hometown when I do my show. And that's not how it works. We know that's not how mm-hmm. it works. I think that if you have something going on and you have people following you on Twitter and all your social medias mm-hmm. is kicking ass, I think that that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. And you have something to promote, a tour or an album or EP coming out, then that's something tangible that we can work with.
Because you want to build up from the story somewhere, and that's something that a lot of artists seem to sort of forget about. They see the song as the main thing, that you don't need much more than a song, don't realize that the story is as important. And do you find that the story is as important as the song?
Sometimes it's more important because you're trying to get the attention of people who are very busy mm-hmm. and are getting press releases and pitches from people all over the country mm-hmm. And the U.S. I know a lot of U.S. publicists will reach out to Exclaim magazine and publications like that in Canada. So you have to make sure that you have something interesting or compelling to get their attention. Mm-hmm. So simply to say, I know it can be disheartening, but one thing that we try to do is, and I'm pretty sure Dale is really great at this, because mm-hmm. I've been on in meetings with him, and that is we try to assess what people's expectations are mm-hmm. right off the top and make mm-hmm. sure that they're realistic. Mm-hmm. Because especially if a musician is fairly new to the industry and they're green, I think it's our responsibility to make sure that they understand that if they don't get 100 CD reviews, that is perfectly normal. Mm-hmm. They might not get 2 CD reviews. So I think it's important to let the people you're working with know that. Mm-hmm. That's like that would be, I guess, the first step. But education. Yeah. I guess that's really, really important, because then they know what they're dealing with and mm-hmm. And they don't get really disappointed if, you know. So one of the things we make really clear, and I think when we put it this way to musicians, they get it. Mm-hmm. What is compelling about your band or mm-hmm. your music over and above all of the other artists out there that are vying for attention? Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a great answer for that, if your answer is just, well, we're from this city and we're releasing a record, not to be shitty, but who isn't releasing a record? You know, but you have to look at it that way. Yeah. So I think once an artist understands that, I think that's a good starting point.
And that's funny you put it that way. I work with on a summer camp, and one of the things when we're promoting ourselves is saying, avoiding the regional aspect, like just basically saying, oh, come here because we're from here, and also avoiding the fact that we are a summer camp, because just basically saying you're a summer camp from here means nothing. It's the unique elements of what we do that set us apart from everybody else.
Of course.
And when I talk to artists, I'm always like, what makes you different than everyone else? What is that unique thing?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's hard for them to answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, do you find that you coach people through trying to find that, or are you looking for them to come with that already set?
It depends, because we work with a variety of artists. Some are mm-hmm. quite big, and others are developing artists.
Mm-hmm.
And so as far as the developing artists go, I think so. Yeah, I would say yes.
And coach a bit there.
But at the same time, it takes time. I mean, you're going to have to do a few interviews before you're, you know, you get good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But what's important to understand is that it's all about planting seeds. And what we do is we plant seeds. That's really what we do. We use our relationships and our expertise. We plant seeds with media. Some grow, some don't, but it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the other thing that is really important to understand is just because you're a new band, you have a CD and you put it out there, if you don't get any attention, that's okay. You've already planted seeds
mm-hmm.
With the people you need to. And it usually takes, you know, three PRs or at least three times communication to one media person for them to really go, oh yeah, that band, or oh, I've seen that band's name somewhere, or so I always use Arkells as an example, because Arkells are well established, and when I was working with them when they were on Dine Alone,
mm-hmm.
It took a good year before people started to pay attention with them. And that's not to say they weren't a great band, they weren't a great live band, their album was great. But it took time to build mm-hmm. a media profile for them.
Well, because there were other bands that had already gone through that process.
Exactly.
And people knew who they were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, on the flip side, sometimes it's older to go back with bands that have been around a long time. And that, you know, because for media people, what's so compelling about Joe Blow's band that's been a band in Canada for 15 years that has a new record? So sometimes you have to look at those cases and see, okay, what is compelling? And what can we take out of this outside of the fact that they've put out this many albums? What's new and exciting that we could offer people to be interested?
What are some examples of, and it could be specific to artists or something, that would catch your attention, either to, say, work with an artist, or that you feel can help set a band apart, other than just being regional, or like, I'm a rock band from Toronto. What are some things that would have caught your eye in the past?
The Elwins are a great example.
Okay.
Great guys. So active with their own stuff, their social mm-hmm. media, that sort of thing. They have such neat ideas. There's an example of a band that came to us that, when I say us, Jen Simic is my partner, Listen Harder. They came to us with an album that they had no record label release date set for. They didn't have management
mm-hmm.
in place at the time. They didn't even have a booking agent in place at the time. So those are three kind of red flags for me. I like when there's a team, or at least it doesn't have to be a team that's, you know, been an artist manager for 20 years and super pro and manages huge acts. It could be someone starting out. I mean, like Joel Carrier started artist management with Alexis on Fire. Now he's a very successful artist manager and label owner, but that's where he started. They were his friends. He loved what they did. He was promoting music and he started managing them.
Mm-hmm.
So, we don't discount stuff like that.
Yeah.
But in this case, these guys were just so active, and they already, media people just loved them because they were always putting stuff out. They do creative things, like they did a video on just with iPhones.
Oh, nice.
So it, you know, that set them apart, because there's some cool things that we could say about them. They always did neat things. Colorado's the same way. I mean, Colorado is always doing the
Wonder
coolest
stage
things.
Shows are always exciting.
Yeah,
and
really
different.
Fun with all the confetti and that sort of thing. And they recently had, they're on tour right now. It's a pretty heavy duty tour across Canada. And it's supporting their album White Paint.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a video, which there's a really neat story. You can go look for it at their website. But about Menno, the lead singer, and his grandfather, and the relationship his grandfather had with a Nazi officer back in the day during the Dutch Revolution, and how he was they saved each other's lives, basically. Huh. It's just a really neat, heartwarming story. Yeah. So that got a lot of attention from National Post and big, big outlets like that. But, you know, that's it's a great story. It's a human interest story, yeah, which people always like.
And how important is digital? Because we always say that digital comes first. When people come to us and say, we want to go to radio, we're like, well, let's check out how you are online, your online social media. How important to you is it that they have a presence online?
I think that's really important, but that's not... To be honest, I don't think we've had anyone really that we're working with that doesn't these days. I mean, everyone seems to be pretty active with the social media that... I mean, the key things like Facebook and Twitter and that sort of thing. And YouTube videos. And I mean, we really have no excuse in this day and age. Everyone can record a video, you know,
there's no
sidewalk,
excuse, but
pull out a guitar. And
I'm always shocked how many people feel that it's not important, that what's important is getting in the paper or getting on the radio, not building the fan base online or engaging people online. So you find artists generally of... that you work with are generally doing...
Generally speaking, yeah. I can't think of a case where someone's not actively seeking out those opportunities. I mean, sometimes we have to remind certain artists, especially artists that have a period of time in between stuff they're promoting, to keep active. And I know it's difficult when you're off tour and you're not, you know, you're not in the studio, kind of idle hands, don't know what to do with yourselves.
Yeah.
But you have to keep... You don't want to keep going to media because there's... You need a break, and there's nothing else exciting to say until the next cycle comes along. But there's no reason why that artist can't be feeding fans and you know, interesting videos or just updates of stuff they're doing, or a cover of their favorite artist or something fun in their bathroom. I don't know, just something, you know.
Yeah.
And I always Dallas Green, who I've worked with since, you know, for over 10 years. He's so funny because he's always saying, why are people, I just don't understand, why do people care about this? Like, someone will ask a question, or I'll get an email, what kind of glasses does Dallas wear, or something, you know? And he's always just amazed at why are people interested in this? But people are very interested in that kind of thing. So they like that aspect. If you're just at a deli in the local town that you're playing and you're doing a little video, eating a sandwich... That's
talking
compelling.
About how great it is.
Exactly.
Going to a landmark or something and filming yourself there so that everybody who's from that city.
Yeah.
I always thought that was neat because people from the city can get excited because you get to see your landmark and your favorite artist. But people who couldn't come to the show kind of feel like they can go along on tour with you because they get to see.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
I know, whereas a tour may seem very... All the things that happen during a tour besides the show may seem very... boring to people who have done it for so long. For people who don't know anything about that world, it's fascinating. So,
and it's something we couldn't do before. We couldn't
exactly
have the access where we could ask an artist, what kind of glasses do you wear? And it was very rare that you could, you'd buy a souvenir book of some sort that would have pictures of the tour, but it's not like you could have this real-time activity with the artist. What is your day-to-day like? I'm sure it shifts day-to-day. It's not the same, but what's a typical day in the life of a publicist in PR?
A typical day is one where you're writing a press release. You're dealing with clients. It depends also on your role, right? If you're more junior, then you're doing press updates and that sort of thing. But as far as my day goes, it's very busy. Writing press releases, disseminating press releases, just coming up with strategies for press. So if we have a band that's on tour, just, you know, looking at the tour and all the cities and the media that we have to go after in each of those cities, and following up with media in those cities. That's pretty much a typical day. And then just a lot of email back and forth, just dealing with, and I don't mean that in a negative way, dealing with clients and... all your colleagues and all the people that you're associated with is a big part of the day as well.
Okay.
But I would say that's the bulk of what you're doing. And of course, if you have artists in town, then you're off doing on-site interviews with them or, you know, taking them to Much Music or wherever you need to take them, CBC, that sort of thing. That's a big part of what you do, but that's not an everyday thing.
And do you go out to seek potential clients to work with, or do people mostly come to you?
I have to be honest. I don't go out to seek artists. Mm-hmm. We get enough people. You get to a point in this business, it's just referrals. Mm-hmm. People, it's your reputation and mm-hmm. referrals. So we get enough referrals that we need to turn down for various reasons. Sometimes we're just not into it. But so I don't need to do that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that I would.
Yeah.
I mean, the only band that I ever kind of went after, was interested in, funny enough, was Alexis on Fire.
Oh, really?
Because there was a guy, Ryan, working at EMI at the time. And he'd found out I was doing some work with Zim Zum, who used to be in Marilyn Manson's band during mm-hmm. the Antichrist Superstar Tour, the really crazy Bomb Threat Tour. And so we just started talking about music, and we had a lot of similar tastes. And at the time, Alexis was this tiny band from St. Catharines that was on a label called Distort, indie label, hard, like a heavy label, mm-hmm. and it was distributed by EMI.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave me the first CD, and when I listened to it, there was just something goosebumpy about it for me. And I know for a lot of people, you know, they may have listened to that first CD and it was difficult for them to get around the vocals because, yeah. you know, you've got George who's screaming essentially, and you've got Dallas, the melodic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but there was something that just attracted to me to mm-hmm. the musicianship. I was amazed because I knew these kids were like high school, a couple of them. So I started to ask a bit about it, and I asked someone at EMI at the time who was handling associated labels. Who are these guys? And I like, this is neat. Like, I just had a gut feel about that band.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met, I met Joel, and I met Greg from Distort, who had signed the band to his little label.
Mm-hmm.
And we just hit it off. And I guess they got to know, I mean, because at the time too, for a band like that to need a publicist, it was probably just kind of, I mean, this is kind of essentially a punk band in a way, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. But that was the only band that I really had this, who are these guys? And went after them, so to speak. I guess yeah. I just wanted to be introduced to their team, and we just connected, and, you know, been working with them, you know, ever since, in Dallas as well. So
was Listen Harder your company at that point? Were you?
No, I was just, I was indie, and yeah. then I did some work at DMD,
okay,
which is yeah. another radio promotion yeah. company. So I was contracted to handle their publicity for a while, and then I left and started Listen Harder officially.
Okay. And when was that?
It's going to be 10 years next 10 years. Year. Yeah.
Oh, that's yeah. like Dale speaking too. I think we've
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're about
oh,
the
that's
same.
Exciting.
Yeah.
yeah, because I mean, I used to just go by my name before that, but then I thought it's time to actually make this official.
Nice. And before that, so you've been a publicist your career, or did you do anything before that?
I'm going to age myself now. I moved to Toronto in 91.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal was to work in the music industry. I mm-hmm. was finished at Carleton University, moved to Toronto from Ottawa, which is where I grew up, and I got a job through a contact that I knew through. I was actually going to Harris for a little while.
Really?
Honestly, to make contacts, really.
Yeah.
And I did, and because I spoke French, I managed to get a gig at an indie label that was distributed by EMI.
Mm.
And it was there, and funny enough, you're going to laugh knowing how difficult it can be doing radio promotion.
Yeah.
My first day, what I got stuck doing was Quebec radio promotion
because
I spoke French.
From here, talking
yeah.
to the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was interesting. I learned, I had no preconceived notions, which was good, about doing radio promotion. Mm-hmm. But in retrospect, I'm so happy that I did radio promo because I have an understanding about the music industry that a lot of publicists mm-hmm. may not have.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very good education. But during that time, I also started doing some national publicity for the label, so I'd be hitting the video outlets, mm-hmm. and we're using fax machines, and, you know, at the time, and calling people. I mean,
yeah.
we're not emailing mm-hmm. people like
it'll
we
be
do.
Quite a few years, but I guess at least 5 years before that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I was quite interested in that because I've always been interested in music and I've always been interested in artists. Mm-hmm. And publicity is one of those careers that you have that connection with the artist, but you're still kind of, you know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
arm's length and, you know, from the artist. So it's a good combination of different skills and different mm-hmm. things that you get to do. So I started to become interested in that. I took some time off when I had my son
mm-hmm.
and then started back into it just, you know, part time. And it just grew from there. So really it grew over time based on the people I was working with. I mean, obviously when I started doing any publicity, it was very small artists.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it took some time. See, it takes time to develop our businesses
yeah,
too, right?
Yeah. And that's something that we always try to sort of hammer in when we're talking to people is the fact that, you know, it gets better kind of an idea that,
mm-hmm.
that the harder you work, the better it'll get. And if it's not working out for you, hopefully by that point you've found a new approach to what you're doing or maybe something new. Did you just basically stuck with publicity? No, you had radio promotion first. When I was talking to some of the other industry people, we talked a lot about how it seems in the industry you bounce around from career to career a lot, or at least from sort of style of career to style of career. Mike Denny started off working sales and
mm-hmm.
then found himself managing and then found himself owner of a label. Other people will start off as a tour manager, then find themselves an artist manager,
mm-hmm.
and then find themselves, say, even in marketing or something. They just sort of bounce around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that a lot in your... Do publicists bounce around a lot, or...?
I don't know. I mean, I would say probably not. I mean, I know
mm-hmm.
some great publicists like Julie Booth and Charlotte Thompson. They've been
mm-hmm.
doing what they do for a long time.
Jane
with
Harbury,
different...
too, I think she's been...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
well, she was... When I was coming up, Jane was one of the key
mm-hmm.
publicists in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very different world now. I mean, publicity was different back then. And just the whole music industry climate was very different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back in the day, it was very hard to make a case to media for a band that was independent. Indie bands... You had to have a story. You had to be, you know, some major label had to be interested in you, or
mm-hmm.
some booking agent, or some big artist
mm-hmm.
manager had to be interested in you, and that's what was compelling.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really interesting for me because I actually worked through that whole period of time. So I saw the shift.
Mm-hmm.
I saw when things started moving towards, hey, this is an indie band. They're not on a big label, and these guys are interested in talking to them. So
mm-hmm.
it was, that's how long I've been doing it.
Well, that's good though. You get to see the transitions.
Yeah.
At least you know what's up now, as
yeah.
opposed to being stuck in an old way of thinking.
Yeah,
you've grown,
no, for sure.
You've grown.
And I feel too, I mean, even back in the day when I was starting out, I think I felt that it was kind of competitive. It was kind of catty, which I didn't like, because that's not how I roll with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love now is that I have these colleagues that I'm not directly related with, that also do what I do, independent
mm-hmm.
publicists, and we have just this spirit of communication and just supporting each other, which
mm-hmm.
is really great, because we know how hard it is to do what we do,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's amazing that we share information and share contacts and all that sort of thing. So I think things have kind of changed that way too.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for somebody that may want to get into publicity or into public relations?
It's a toughie because the music industry in general, I find, is something that you get, it's the school of hard knocks, right?
Mm-hmm.
You intern somewhere. You make contacts if
mm-hmm.
you're the kind of person, if you're likable and you work hard and you're resourceful, and you will get another job somewhere else. And sometimes you have to bounce around a lot to
mm-hmm.
to actually find, you know, find your way. But how I started was basically working with friends' bands in Ottawa. I started working for CKCU,
mm-hmm.
so I started learning about all that kind of stuff. I started booking my friends' bands, which was, you know, I mean, it's funny. I mean, we're teenagers, but... So I started to learn a few things on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I never went to school of publicity. It plays to my strengths because, you know, writing is something that comes easy to me. And I think my personality is well suited, which is probably why I'm attracted to doing publicity. But outside of that, I really can't say that there's one career path that you can take, that if you go to this school and take this program, then you will become a publicist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it really is about connections and contacts, networking. So I think if you can immerse yourself in with people that can lead you to that. So for instance, you get to know your local bookers or your local promoters and say, hey, can I help you promote shows? And just then you start to get to know, because these promoters are dealing with big booking agents. They're dealing sometimes with artist managers, and you just kind of start to get to know the players. That's probably a good way to start, but it's hard. I get asked that on when I do panels by, you know, fresh-faced, you know, students.
Yeah.
I never know really how to answer that question, because it's not one clear cut path.
And it seems to be pretty common that people is literally started on the ground floor.
Exactly.
Working for nothing, helping people out. And it was just this web.
Right.
That just started building, that they started climbing up. That seems to be
Here's an example. I mean, it's important to learn, you know, how to write a press release and all those sorts of things. But let's say there was a school of publicity and you went to that school for a couple of years. So you're ready to start your own company, indie company. You have all of your, you know, your entire contact database of every relevant media person across the country. That's where you start. But it's going to take you a while to develop relationships with those people, that they actually read your email, they pay attention to what you're doing or what you're saying. So I think it could probably be quite disheartening at first, but you always have those little successes along the way. So I think that to me is sort of the most clear cut way. But again, it's just, there's too many variables. There's no one path.
And do you have any advice for bands? We talked about people who may want to get into publicity, some advice for bands who, generally they're reaching out to blogs, trying to get attention from blogs, and a lot of them do it themselves until they reach a certain level. Do you have any tips or tricks, maybe two or three things that bands should be sure to do when reaching out to blogs, or avoid doing at all costs when reaching out to blogs?
Well, I can answer that same question with one reply, and that's keep your pitch, because that's really what it is. You're pitching your band to somebody in hopes that they're going to pay attention or write about it or come review your show. Keep it short and sweet. I've had emails that are just, you know, a page. I don't have time to read a page email from someone that I don't even know. Media people work on deadlines all the time. So what I like to do, and this is what I would recommend, is you have a couple of key highlights, and the highlights would be what's exciting and compelling about your band. You make this kind of music, you're selling out your local, let's say your local club, or you're playing a lot around town, you're putting out some music. Just the key things, the key points. This is who we are, this is what we're up to, this is why you may be interested in us, and if you want more information, here it is. And then you give them all the information. So for instance, when I do follow-up pitches, let's say we send a press release out on a tour. Yes, all of these people have received the press release according to my database, because they're an email in my database that gets my PR.
Yeah.
But I can't make any assumptions, considering how busy they are and all the other pitches they're getting, that they're going to necessarily read it. So what I like to do is when I go back into, you know, when I'm actually working, let's say a tour date. So let's say I'm working a tour date in Calgary and I go to Mike at Calgary Herald, I'll say, this band's coming through town and and these are the reasons why you should be interested. This is a really cool story. A link to listen to something and to watch something is really important, unless it's really shitty.
Just a one-click kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Not 10 things. If you have something written about you, a link to an article. And then outside of that, I say, here's the PR that we sent out so that it's at your fingertips. Because I don't expect him to go back into his email and go and search for my press release. So I don't need to reiterate everything in it. If he's interested, he's going to go, and then he'll read it, and then, you know, he'll let me know if he wants to do something. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think as an artist, you'd be well served to do the exact same thing.
Keep it simple, summarize it if you're going to follow up, and don't clog up their inbox.
Yeah, and don't bug them.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually an issue that we found with people contacting iTunes, where they'll actually get a response from iTunes saying, we're interested in your music, and then they'll, 3 days later, say, so are you going to feature it? And at least the case that I've seen this happen, the feature never came, even though in previous conversations it seemed like there was one coming, and I'm pretty sure it was the pestering that bothered them. And that will happen, I guess, with blogs and stuff as well. You got to sort of expect that they read it and that they'll get back to you if they're interested.
Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with, I mean, we will do a second follow-up, especially if it's important, because we recognize that, or sometimes a third. But, yeah, you have to be, I don't even know, what is that called? When you are aware of...
Yeah, like almost humility, like...
I guess so, yeah.
Gravitas, I'm aware that you're busy, rather than poking and saying, have you gotten around to reading it yet?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
You, when you follow up, if you haven't heard back, sometimes I'll send a note and say, I know you're really busy, that's crazy, right? This fall's so crazy, and, but, you know, if you get a chance, just let me know either way if we'll be able to do something. And then usually I get a response going, oh my gosh, yeah, it's so crazy, sorry I didn't get back to you, or something. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes some media people never write us back, ever, unless they're interested in something. And then I just know that you just don't bug those people too much. So you have to use your discretion.
Very cool. Well, I think that's good. Actually, I have one more quick question. Yeah, Is being a publicist fun?
I have to say it's fun, because there could be so many worse jobs. I mean, we have crap that we have to deal with. It's not always a perfect day, and what keeps it fun for me is that it's, even though we're doing very similar things every day, it's always different because it's a different band. You're working with different people. You're working with different media people. So that keeps it really, really interesting. And the fact that I can do really fun, cool things like, you know, be at an awards show with my guys and meet interesting people and do something creative. And I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's not fun all the time because it's still your...
It's a job.
It's a job. And I'm sure you ask any musician, is it fun all the time? And they're going to say no. Being on the road's not fun all the time. So, but yeah, it's... As far as... I can't complain.
That's good. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure being on.
And that has been Radio Dale number 44. My name is Rue.
I'm India.
And I'm Amber.
If you would like to find us online, we're at Twitter, Dale_speaking. We're Dale Speaking on Creaking. Dale Speaking on Facebook. And of course, DaleSpeaking.com if you want to see all of our blogs and the clients we work with and all that other kind of funky stuff you can find on our website.
And we've updated our biographies.
Yes, we updated our biographies.
And took sexy pictures.
Well, you guys had sexy pictures.
You had
we
the
didn't
sexy
put
it smoldering.
That's right. I guess I'm giving the eyes.
We didn't put up my sexiest one.
No, we should though. Maybe I'll save it and I'll like slowly switch in pictures you guys did not approve. Like a month from now.
And then we'll never notice.
You'll never notice.
You never go there.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm going to read my own bio today.
We have bios. We have new pictures. So go check it out at dalespeaking.com to find out a bit more about the folks you listen to. Do we have any final words before we run away?
Next week's going to be a spooky episode, so you'll want to stay tuned for that.
Yes, it will. It'll be very spooky.
If the zombie apocalypse is not upon us. Because we've been sitting here doing this podcast the entire time we've heard it. Helicopter circling, and then we heard sirens.
Yeah.
So, and you're not Rob, you're Rue.
I'm not Rob.
Your Siri isn't working, and that can only mean one thing, the world is ending.
So, well, it's true. Let's
do a quick example. Check.
Oh God. Siri, is it the end of the world?
Okay, I found this on the web.
Never mind, Siri works now.
Siri, tell me about the economic corruption of Brazil.
Here's what I found on the web.
She finds stuff for me, but she never tells me anything.
What a bitch.
Anyways, that's been fun. We'll see you next week for Radio Dell number 45, the spooky Halloween episode. Thunder.